Good morning, everybody. Shmuel Plotzker coming at you live. Excuse me. Great start. Coming at you live from my house. It's Monday morning. It's August 17, 2020, and at Gulf Manor Synagogue School of Jewish Studies and SheerEnjoyment.com are joining together this morning and, God willing, for the foreseeable future to offer a class in Masechet Chagiga. And if you're on this phone call, that's the reason why you're here. You saw an email to Cincy Shules, or you saw a text on Sheer Enjoyment's a bulletin board, and you're joining us because this is Intro to Talmud 101. I call it that because it's going to be really basic. And as I wrote in my email to my Cincinnati neighbors, it's meant for children who are being homeschooled for various reasons, and it'll even be applicable to adults who want to study Talmud and feel that there are some deficiencies or they didn't get some rock-solid fundamentals along the way. And that is true for many of us, that along the way people just assumed you knew this and you knew that. And before you know it, you realize that you don't, and there's no way for you to find the ways to fill those gaps. And hopefully you'll find it in this class. I was a student at the great privilege of being a Talmud at Yeshiva Darche Noam, David Chappelle College of Jewish Studies. And even though I had a somewhat extensive background, having gone to Yeshiva in New York City, I felt the need to learn how to learn. And so after college, I went off to Chappelle's, and I'm so glad that I did. And now I can share whatever I learned over there. I was there for 2.5 years. Share that with you. Basic fundamental Talmudical principles and knowledge and understanding. Whatever I know, I'm going to share with you. Along the way, we developed some knowledge of grammar. If that becomes applicable, we'll share that as well. We'll also have a framework in which to study the Talmud when we get to it. But first, our game plan is as follows. When I was in first year, first level shiur, Rav Feigenbaum was my Rebbe, and by the way, I do recommend, as my email said, I recommend purchasing the book called Understanding the Talmud by Rebbe Yitzchak Feigenbaum, a production of Darche Noam Publications in Feldheim. So by all means, get your hands on that book, Understanding the Talmud by Feldheim. It's got the Shas all stacked up, maybe 12 volumes on this side, 12 on that side. Get your hands on that book, and you'll see why once we actually begin our study of the Talmud itself. First level Shia was very, very, it was just a great class, introduced me to the about 150 to 200 keywords and phrases that introduce four different kinds of statements, two different kinds of questions, and answers that the Talmud is constantly, in its dialectic, it's always involved in. It gives you a statement of fact or a statement of qualification. It'll ask an attack question. It'll ask for informational materials. That's an informational question. And it's like driving a car and there are road signs. When you see a certain word, you know, oh, that's a certain kind of a question. Oh, that's a certain kind of a statement. So we're going to explore that when it becomes relevant. Second level shiur, though I wasn't in it, was given by Rabbi Chaim Meyersdorf, and he had a very interesting approach. He told his guys that he was going to be learning Mishnayos with them, then Tosefta, then the Brisos, and then he was going to jump into Talmud. I imagine it must have taken them some time. But that way you get this kind of organic feel to the material. The traditional way of studying Talmud these days is you learn one Mishnah, then you learn two or three Dapim of Gemara, another Mishnah, then two or three or four or five more Dapim of Gemara, and it's, I wouldn't say it's artificial, but it just feels a little bit, unusual maybe for some people who are going like, I don't really know much about the material to begin with, and suddenly being plunged into this, the deep blue sea of the Talmud, and I need a little bit more when it comes to just basic rudimentary information about the Masechta that I'm studying. Hopefully we'll get that in our approach. I do know, I'm going to note, that Chagiga seems to be a very bifurcated kind of a Masechta. The first half of it or so deals with the mitzvah of Re'iyah or Rayon, and that is the mitzvah of seeing and being seen in Jerusalem three times a year when you go up for the three big festivals. Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. Those are the three major festivals, and a Jewish male above the age of Bar Mitzvah was obligated to go to the Beis HaMikdash three times a year for those three festivals. But the rest of the Masechta is all about Tumah and Tahara, at least in the Mishnah it is. And they're kind of like, you know, never the twain shall meet a little bit. One is all about the mitzvah of going to Jerusalem and what do you do when you're there and what are the karbanos that you bring when you're there. And then the second half is all about the mitzvahs of Tumah and Tahara, of purity and impurity. Now, that does impact, obviously, because when you get to Jerusalem and you want to go to the temple, you got to be pure, and you have to avoid impurity. So, yes, there is a relationship there. But the Mishnayos are going to get into really deep, they're going to get involved in the various inyanim of purity and impurity. And I think we can kind of successfully split, in a way, we can probably do the Mishnayos and the Tosefta that deal with the mitzvah of going to Jerusalem and what do you do when you finally get there, what karbanos do you have to bring when you're there, who's obligated to do that. We could probably do the Mishnayos and the Tosefta, and I'll skim through the Brisos and the Masechta and see what's relevant, and we'll tease those out, and hopefully we'll get the Tannaitic material down pat. Once we have that down pat, I think I also promised everybody we'd see Midrashi Halacha. Those are Midrashim that the rabbis expounded that derive out of the Psukim that we're going to see in the actual biblical account. The mitzvah of Re'iyah comes up in Shmos. So if there are Midrashim that deal with those Psukim, the rabbis expound on those Psukim in a Midrashic way, and they give a little story, or they give you a little extra insight, or they make a connection between one word and a different word, and you get an extra insight through that. If that becomes relevant, we're also going to share that with you too. I'm thinking that once we do the Re'iyah part of the Masechta, maybe we'll do the Talmudical treatment of that mitzvah, and we'll see the doctrine of Gemara that relate to that. And then when it comes to the Inyane, the topics of Tumah and Tahara, then we'll kind of switch back, do the Mishnayos, Tosefta, and Brisos, and the Talmud on that. And there's a tremendous amount of Agadata, a lot of Midrashim, very exciting material in this Masechta. And it's also become, I think, sad, and Rabbi Foreman gave a shiur recently at YU through Yeshiva University on learning Tanakh, and he was bemoaning the fact that in many yeshivas, guys are into the lumdus and they skip the midrashim. I'm into midrashim, so for me, this Masechta is going to be just delicious, and I hope it'll be for you as well. Be a lot of great juicy stuff, and I'm hoping that you'll enjoy the ride. So without further ado, if you're at home, I recommend that you get your hands on a Masechta Chagiga. That could be either for now the dedicated Mishnayos of Chagiga, because we're going to be focusing in on that for the next week or two or three, however long it takes to get us through the Mishnayos, and we're going to go slowly. There's no rush over here. You signed up for a class called Intro to Talmud 101, so you know that we're going to be doing this in a slightly different way. And you wanted to learn Chagiga through Daf Yomi, you're welcome to do that, and you should. But this is going to be a different kind of an approach, slightly slower, more organic, geared towards real rank beginners, and don't feel embarrassed. If that word is applied to you, there's nothing embarrassing about it. And children, don't worry about it. After a couple of months, you're not going to be a rank beginner. We're going to go from nothing to something in about 6 months. You're not going to even recognize yourself anymore. But you have to be patient, and you've got to trust, and we're going to see a lot of material. And I recommend you get a notebook out and that you write down words like nouns, adjectives, and verbs. And I know that you think I must be crazy, but that's how we're going to build our vocabulary. And we have I have a friend who wrote to me last night and says, how are we going to build vocabulary over the phone? And I thought to myself, the way we do anything over the phone, I'll tell you what to write, you write it down. I don't mean to dictate to anybody what to do, but I'm just going to strongly suggest you get out a notebook, call it Masechta Chagiga. I'm going to make a bracha now. Wow, I get dry really fast when I'm talking. Anybody wants to jump in at any time, feel free to do so. Just identify yourself so I'll know who you are. Also, I'm going to ask you to please, if you like, please email me your contact information. Could be in the way of a name and a phone number, a text number, or an email, so I can contact you directly. I recommend that you get out a piece of paper if you don't have a dedicated notebook. But you should have a dedicated notebook because you're going to start filling it up very, very fast with vocabulary words that you're not familiar with potentially. And on the and in the notebook, write down the word Masechta Chagiga. Do it right now. Masechta Chagiga. Spell it any way you want. But Chagiga, you should spell Ches Gimel Yud Gimel Hey. Chagiga. And then write down underneath that vocabulary building. And on the left-hand side, write the word nouns. Underline it. In the middle, write the word adjectives. Underline that. And on the right-hand side of the page, write the word verbs. And underline that. How are we doing so far? Hopefully good. Now let's begin. But before we begin, we have to at least see the psukim that discuss the mitzvah of Re'iyah. We don't just plunge into the Talmud. You got to see the Mishnah. No, you can't even plunge into the Mishnah yet. You got to see the underlying psukim. You got to see the biblical verses that talk about the mitzvah of Re'iyah, of seeing and being seen. I've got a dedicated Art Scroll Mishnayos book, and it's called, we have it at Gulf Manor Synagogue in our main sanctuary, in our collection. Thank you, Rabbi Alt, for buying it. And it's a very, very nice treatment of the Mishnayos. Has some very, very good, useful footnotes. And I'll throw those out for, explanation reasons as we go. So you'll get an idea. So you're not going to be in total darkness. I'm just going to just translate a word. No. It requires, a little bit of explanation. And you can feel free to write down whatever you'd like when the explanation comes out. But first things first, let's at least see the biblical verses. Let's begin. And so in the opening page, where it's a general introduction in my Art Scroll Mishnayos, they give you the important words of the psukim in Exodus, in the book of Shmos, and that can be found in chapter 23, verses 14, 15, 16, and 17. And here are the relevant words that appear in those biblical verses. Shalosh regalim tachog li bashana. Three pilgrimage festivals shall you celebrate to me during the year. And, of course, you and I know what those are. Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. Those three big pilgrimage festivals are the ones being discussed. And you've got to go up to Jerusalem in Israel to the Beis HaMikdash during those three big holidays. What are they again? Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. See, we're learning stuff already. Okay? V'lo yereu fanai reikam. They, amazing that they mistranslate this, V'lo yera'u, they will not be seen, is literally how to translate that. They will not be seen. Panai, my face. Now, I realize that's strange English, but that's the Hebrew. So you have to massage a little bit. What it's going to mean is they will not be seen before my face. Reikam, empty, meaning empty-handed. You can't approach the Almighty who's given you life, and liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, if I can use an expression that's thrown around here in the United States. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. God gave you all that. He gave you wonderful parents, put a roof over your head, and clothes on your back, and food in your belly, and you now have to thank him. Now, obviously, you thank him every single day. But three times a year, the Almighty wants you to appear in Yerushalayim, and you're going to see miracles, and you're going to see maybe the Shekhinah. In the first Beis HaMikdash, there were many, many nisim, and you could have had some sort of vision of the holy presence of a sort, however that may have looked, the holy cloud maybe. Maybe you've actually felt the Shekhinah, and you brought your karbon, and you prayed all together. It was a beautiful, and you were surrounded by tens of thousands of Jewish people, who were, and maybe hundreds of thousands who were coming in from all over the world and all over the land of Israel to bring their karbonos. So you should not appear before Hashem empty-handed. You have to show some respect and appreciation. And so you have to come with your animals. And you're going to offer up two karbanos. But we're not there just yet. Let the psukim say what they've got to say. But when you see the words, they shall not be seen before me empty-handed, it means you're going to have to bring some karbanos, some sacrifices, some animals. Shalosh pa'amim bashana, three times during the year, Yeh kol zechorcha, all your men will be seen, el paneha adon Hashem, before the master Hashem, the Almighty God. Very good. I'm going to just make a little note over here myself that v'lo yera'u does not get translated as you shall not appear. That would be v'lo teira'u. But over here it means they will not. You see that? Look at that. I don't mean to be a stickler, but I am crazy about grammar. So at all events, that's the opening. Those are the psukim. So let's read a little bit more before we get into our first Mishnah. Okay? The Torah commands each, let's get familiar with the mitzvah itself. The Torah commands each Jewish male to go to the temple, the Beis HaMikdash, three times a year during the festivals of, can you say it with me? Yep. Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, to appear before God and make sacrificial offerings on the altar. Okay? On the Mizbeach. And the footnote says that the Mizbeach, the altar, stood in the courtyard of the temple, and animal, bird, and flower offerings were brought on it. Animal offerings were slaughtered inside the courtyard. The blood that spurted from the incision in the neck was caught in a bowl, and then it was applied to one or more places on the walls of the Mizbeach, of the altar, depending on the type of offering. The application of the blood is what makes the offering valid. By the way, when we begin our study of the Mishnah, some of the words you will already know. So you're going to decide whether you want to write them down. If they're already in your head, it's great. If you want to write them down anyway for the sake of completion, you're welcome to do that. And the words that you don't know, obviously, we strongly recommend that you build a list of vocabulary words. This is how anybody learns anything. If you're studying Lahavdil, the law, medicine, dentistry, there are special words. Torah has the same thing. And more so, you've got to learn these holy words. So you'll be able to have a understand the Mishnah and have a conversation. Okay? Then it continues over here. There are two types of offerings which must be brought, and we're going to learn about these offerings because it's not enough just to simply show up at the Beis HaMikdash and say and wave to God and say, I'm here. God's going to go, that's great. I'm glad you're here. Where are your karbanos? And you'll say, wah, 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 I don't have any. God's going to say, but the Pasuk says, I told Moshe to tell you, you can't come to me empty-handed. You've got to make sure you make arrangements that you, so that you bring karbanos. You can't just show up and wave at me and think that you did the mitzvah of Re'iyah. You've got to do a little bit more than that. And by the way, where do we see this mitzvah of Re'iyah anyway in our davening? Well, in the opening brachos, we say, Elu devarim she'ein lahem shir. These are the things which have no set amount. Hapeah, leaving over peah for the poor people in your field if you own a farm. The habikurim and the first fruits. You can have to. You can bring like a ton of that stuff. There's almost no limit to how many first fruits you can bring. Obviously, you're going to bring a basket of your first fruits. But if you want to bring even more than that, then the sky's the limit. Nobody will stop you. Excuse me. Vaharayon. And showing up and seeing and being seen, which is our mitzvah that we're discussing in this Masechta of Chagiga. What does that mean? It means you can go to the Beis HaMikdash all the time and see and be seen. Thing is, there are three times a year when you have to do it. The rest of the year, you are allowed to do it. You've got, it's on you. If you want to make the trip to Israel, you're welcome to do so, but you're not obligated to do it in December. If you feel like doing that, Matova Manoyan, it's fabulous. But when do you have to do it? Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. But there are no limits. You can go throughout the year. And nobody will stop you from visiting the holy precincts of our Beis HaMikdash on the Har HaBayit. And it continues, Gemilas Chasadim, you could do Chesed nonstop. Nobody will stop you. It's a beautiful thing. But Talmud Torah, and of course there's no end to Talmud Torah. There's no end to how much learning of Torah you can do. And we encourage maximal effort. To continue in our little introduction over here that the Art School Mishnayos gives, two types of offerings must be brought. When you make your appearance before God in the Beis HaMikdash, in ancient times, and of course we hope and pray that God's help, Mashiach will come, and however that gets done, you can come to my Mashiach class. When Mashiach comes, it's on every Monday afternoon, it'll be today at 1 o'clock. We're seeing a book called When Mashiach Comes. Who's going to build the Beis HaMikdash? When's it going to be done? Is it going to be before Mashiach arrives or after Mashiach arrives? So like everything else in Judaism, it's a machlokas. But please come to the class. We'll see various aspects. We're already 100 pages into the book. a super interesting book, and you'll get, if you'd like, you can hear previous talks on it on sheerenjoyment.com. Now, continuing in our work over here, two types of offerings must be brought. An Ola Shri'iyah, and you might want to write that down for starters. Ola Shri'iyah, spelled Ayin Vav Lamed Saf, Ri'iyah, Resh Aleph Yudhei. An Ola Shri'iyah, which is literally, you can write this down, the translation, a burnt offering for appearance. A burnt offering. That's what it, blessed. That's what an ola is. Blessed. No, a burnt offering. And ri'iyah is appearance. So this is an olas ri'iyah. And it's in smichut, meaning you're combining these two nouns. We do it all the time. There's a political organization called Agudas Yisrael. That is Agudas Shel Yisrael, like the union of Israel. And you create this smichut, this contraction, Agudas Yisrael. Over here, it's ola shel ri'iyah, a burnt offering of appearance. So you kind of scope it down. In Hebrew, it's called smichut. You're combining one word with the other. Ola shel ri'iyah becomes ola shri'iyah. And that's how it's going to be. You're never going to see the words ola shel ri'iyah. It's always going to be ola shri'iyah. It's more elegant, more poetic, and it's more efficient. So that's how you're going to see it. Ola shri'iyah, you got to bring that sacrifice, a burnt offering for appearance. And then you have to bring shalmei chagiga, and that's going to be peace offerings of celebration. And shalmei chagiga, it's also in smichut, and you've got these two words, shlamim shel chagiga, peace offerings of celebration. And so in the Hebrew language, we do the smichut, we combine these two words, and shlamim shel chagiga becomes shalmei chagiga. You might want to write that down. Shalmei chagiga, two words, shin lamed mem yud, shalmei, and then chagiga, which is, of course, the name of our mesechta, our tractate that we're studying. And you can write down its translation, peace offerings of celebration. I make a slight mistake over here by giving it in the singular. It's really in the plural, okay, because it just is. It's in the plural. Shalmei chagiga, peace offerings of celebration. And the Rambam paskins like that, in Ilchas chagiga. As with all sacrificial offerings, these are slaughtered and their blood is applied to the walls of the Mizbeach. The meat of the Olas Re'iyah is then burnt on the Mizbeach. No part of that is eaten. It is just completely burnt on the altar, on the Mizbeach. The meat of the Shalmei Chagiga, though, that's different. That's eaten by the owner of the offering and his family and his guests. Remember, these are the pilgrimage festivals. You're going up with, I mean, not just by yourself. You're going up with your wife and your children, and you're going, for Pesach, you're going to have like a whole chabura. You're going to have a whole bunch of people over there, so you're going to have to be able to feed them, obviously. So you're going to want to maybe have more than just one animal. So that's going to be discussed as well going forward. It's not of concern to us at the moment, but it will be down the road. Okay? But at least let me just read this to you. The meat of the Shalmei Chagiga, that second sacrifice, that is eaten by the owner of the offering and his family and his guests, and only a portion of its fats and organs are burnt on the altar. Okay? So chapter 1 in our Masechta of Chagiga will teach the rules for all these obligations. Who is obligated? How much the offering must be worth? It's right out of Pesukim. You will celebrate for me during the year. Who's you? Who's Tachog Li? Who's Tachog? Who's being referenced when Hashem commands, you're going to have to come and celebrate. And they must not be empty-handed. Okay? Yereh Kol Zechurcha. All your menfolk will be seen. Who's menfolk? Who does that mean? Who does that include? And who does it exclude? So we'll discuss it. So, chapter 1, again, teaches the rules for these obligations. Who is obligated? How much the offering must be worth? How much money is it going to cost? What types of money may be used to buy them? And when these offerings may be brought? And that's chapter 1. And if we just do the Mishnayos of chapter 1, and then we see the Tosefta of chapter 1, and the Midrashim, and the Brisos, and then we plunge into the Talmud, that might very well be a way to approach this Masechta. I'm just thinking out loud. I think that's a way to do it. You know what? Now we're ready to begin. It's 5 to 11. Let's see chapter 1, Mishnah 1 of Masechta Chagiga. Here we go. I'll do the reading. Hakol Chayavin Bara'iyah. All are obligated. Everybody is obligated in Re'iyah. Amazing. Look at that word. Hakol. Everybody. The whole kit and caboodle population, apparently. Again, it's going to be talking about men. Chayavin are obligated Bara'iyah. So every male is obligated in Re'iyah. Every bar mitzvah male is obligated in this mitzvah of seeing and being seen in the Beis HaMikdash on the three big festivals. What are they? I know I'm repeating myself, but you have to. That's how we learn stuff. Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. Okay? Hakol chayav in Bara'iyah. Everybody is chayav in Re'iyah. And if you want to start building your vocabulary, then you might want to add the words chayav. Okay? Maybe that's going to be an adjective. Somebody is chayav, it means he is obligated. Okay? And Re'iyah is our word. It's the lodestone of the whole Masechta. Re'iyah is the mitzvah of seeing and being seen. So we might as well add that to our list of nouns. I strongly recommend that underneath the where you wrote the word noun or nouns, and you underline the word nouns, add the words Re'iyah. Re'iyah means the mitzvah of seeing and being seen. And that's what we're all about in the Masechta of Chagiga. Okay? So, start that off. Chutz, except for Chutz Mecheresh, Shota V'Katan. That is a combination that comes up repeatedly throughout the Mishnaic literature. In the Tannaitic literature and the rabbinical writings, those three, it's like they just make up a group that just cannot be dissolved. Cheresh, Shota, V'Katan. Okay, let's define those words, and you're going to add those words to your noun list. A cheresh is a deaf mute. Okay, so you want to write down cheresh, ches, resh, shin, underneath your nouns and your noun, you know, listing. You're slowly building a bunch of nouns. Cheresh, that is a deaf mute, somebody who can neither hear nor speak. And such a person was considered by the sages, according to the art scroll here, to be mentally incompetent. Things have changed in the past 2,000 years, and we know that there are people. Helen Keller jumps out at me in a very big way. She's not the only one, but she's a parade example of a very intelligent person who was never, sadly, deaf and mute and blind. And she eventually was able to, learn to communicate. The teacher was gifted, and she was able to get through to her. And Helen Keller went on to write books and became an internationally known individual for those who have certain handicaps. So we don't really look, I mean, in society today, nobody looks at nobody looks at a deaf mute as somebody who's mentally incompetent. A person can be very, very intelligent, but never cannot hear. And if you can't hear, it's difficult to actually learn how to pronounce words. You learn how to speak through hearing speech. That's what all little children do. That's when you're a little baby. I mean, you're not talking immediately right out of the womb. You listen and listen for some time, and you start making some little sounds. Before you know it, you're speaking Russian or Chinese or Hebrew or English, whatever the language is all around you. So to say that Cheresh is mentally deficient, incompetent, what can I say? I mean, there is some halachic literature out there that is addressing the fact that in today's time, when you've got people who are intelligent and they're getting schooled and they know how to, you know, they know how to read Braille and they know how to sign language. So these are people who are very intelligent, and they just happen to have these avenues of communication cut off for them. But if you get through to them via Braille or through signing, they'll show that they're more than mentally competent. So like I said, things have changed a little bit. At all events, in those days, this is how it was. A chayresh, a deaf mute, was somebody who was considered not holding in life, and therefore he's always grouped together with other people who are not holding and are not obligated to do the mitzvahs. So we've defined the word chayresh, and you put that into your noun list. Go back to the Mishnah now and see the next noun, shoteh. A shoteh is somebody who is, they translate as somebody who's insane. Okay, he's deranged. An insane person, a fool, is how you use it today colloquially. That guy's a real shoteh. Man, that guy's a shoteh. That guy, he'll believe anything. He's an absolute, you know, a fool. But halachically, the word means somebody who is very, very mentally not with us. He's deranged. He's totally unstable mentally, and he's not responsible for his actions. Lahavdil, in American law, if I'm not mistaken, if you want to be able to put somebody up on trial, you have to first do a mental competency exam. And if a person's accused of some of the worst and most heinous crimes, you've got to determine whether or not he knows right from wrong. Does he know that he's not allowed to kill somebody? I mean, it's actually a question. For somebody who's already so out there mentally, he may not know that it's wrong to kill somebody. He may just think, you know, it's just part of my life. You know, I hurt that one, I kill this one. Well, that's not civilized society. That's not law and order. Is this guy mentally fit to stand on trial? Did he know at the time that he killed somebody that he wasn't allowed to do that? It's a real question for some people who are very, very unwell. So if they're that unwell, then if their psychiatric test confirms that they're not very, very well in their brain, it could very well be that they can't stand on trial, because what are you going to try them for? They never knew that it was wrong to kill somebody. So if he didn't even know it was wrong. So the guy is so out there. So he's going to probably be in America anyway. They send you, if we still have them, to a psychiatric ward for an indeterminate amount of time, an undetermined amount of time. It could be for like forever. Because this guy can't go back to society, and the prison, what are you going to send him to prison for? He never had his day in court. You get the idea, it's a problem. And then when they started closing these various facilities, it explains why we have so many problems on the streets today. May not be the only reason, but it's a reason. At all events, cheresh, a deaf mute. Shota, somebody who's insane, who's not well mentally. The katan, and a katan. A katan, you can add this to your list of nouns, a katan is a minor. Okay, he's under the age of bar mitzvah. Okay? A katan is under the age of bar mitzvah. He's a little boy who's not yet 13. He therefore is below the age where he's obligated to perform mitzvahs. But there's only one wrinkle. The wrinkle is, it's not going to be that simple. This mission is now going to take it to the next level for a katan. Even though he's not obligated to do the mitzvah of Re'iyah, it's true. If he's 11 years old, he's not mechuyav. He's not chayiv to get on a boat, and if he's living in Athens or Rome, wherever they're living, to get in a boat and make the trip over the sea to Israel and go to Yerushalayim. But it could be that he is still in all of the age where his father should be training him to do a mitzvah, even this mitzvah. And fathers are training their kids constantly. Either the kid is really small, is really young, okay, but he's reaching the age of chinuch, he's in the age of chinuch, of education, so even though he may be 5 or 6 or 7 or 8, clearly not bar mitzvah, obviously, but still, because we want to train children to hit the ground running, when they become bar mitzvah, nothing should be foreign to them. They should have studied about it. They should have seen or actually done the mitzvah themselves. And they'll feel comfortable year in and year out, or it depends upon the mitzvah, month in and month out, whatever that is, they're going to be comfortable, whether it's studying, or praying, or shaking the lulav, lighting the Hanukkah menorah, building a sukkah, maybe not fasting necessarily until a certain age, but you get the idea. When we're going to get to this in the Mishnah, how old is a katan so that he should still be a part of this great gathering of Jewish people? I know that he's 12, and he's not obligated to go to the to Jerusalem, but can he go anyway? And how old is it? When is he too young? When is he way too young that he's not even in the parsha? Of course, when he's 12, he should be accompanying his father. What about if he's a year and a half? Should he also be going on the mitzvah? Should he be going to Jerusalem? He's 2 years old? Maybe not. We'll have to see. So they write over here, the Rabbi Batshenura writes, once he's old enough to begin doing a mitzvah, his father is obligated to train him to perform that mitzvah. The Mishnah below will define the age of training for this mitzvah. It's going to be very, very particular to this mitzvah of Re'iyah, of going to Jerusalem to the Beis HaMikdash. We're not talking about building a sukkah or lighting a Hanukkah menorah. That's something else. Talk to your local Orthodox rabbi about that. But right here, right now, we're going to be, and obviously this class is not halacha l'maisa. By no means am I capable of poskening Yerushalayim. But we're just learning for learning's sake. This is a limud Torah for its own sake. L'shma, we're learning what the Mishnah has to say, what the Talmud has to say. You would need a psak halacha, you ask your rabbi. So we're going to be discussing in the Mishnah the age under which it's just too young. The kid is way too small to be going to Jerusalem. I mean, the kid's 6 months old, obviously. That's an insane proposition to take a little baby. Oh, I got to take the kid. He's a boy. No. I mean, be normal. I mean, he can't train a six-month-old. But how about a four-year-old? That's a whole different child. So we'll have to see the Mishnah when we get there. We're continuing. Okay? Akochav Maria, Chutz Mecherishote V'Katan. Okay, we continue. V'Tumtum. All right. Let's all be, big boys and girls. If you're any females, you're welcome to join us in our class. Men and women of all ages and stages, boys and girls alike, you're welcome to be learning this Mishnah. And now we get to the word Tumtum. And the word androgynos, and we have to all, man up and not snicker too much because this is the Torah. And if you've learned some Chumash Bereishis, then you've already been introduced to things that are a little bit out there too. And you just understand that it's the Holy Torah, and we're talking about historical things that happened. And listen, that's how it was. So we all become very mature when we study the Bible and when we study the Mishnah. And there's no room for snickering and tittering and laughing. Tumtum. A tumtum is a person whose gender we simply cannot determine. It's impossible to know whether this person's a boy or a girl. There's a membrane covering up the genitalia, and we simply do not know whether this being in front of us is a boy or a girl. No, there's no such thing. No, we're not talking about two heads. We're talking about an individual with one head, okay? And nice try. Nice try, Mendel. My two boys are listening in on this. Nice try, but we're talking about a one-headed being, which 99% of the world population is, maybe 99.9% is one-headed. Okay, we'll go all the way out there. It's only like in the most unusual cases that you find. And there are two sisters who are one body, two heads. Highly, highly unusual. So incredibly unusual. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about a person who's got two arms, two legs, one head. However, the genitalia is not clear. And so we just don't know. It's impossible to know if that person is male or female. So since that's the case, since you do not know whether this person, write this down, tum-tum, tes mem, Tes vav mem, tumtum. Write that down. That's to somebody who is of unknown gender. You just don't know what he or she is. Can't be determined with any certainty. Therefore, such a person should live and be well, but that individual is not obligated, not obligated to go to the Beis HaMikdash. There is no responsibility, no Torah command that falls upon that person to go. He or she is off the hook. Why? Because the Pasuk had said, Yeraya kol zechurcha, all your menfolk, all your males will be seen. And this individual, well, quite frankly, we just don't know whether this individual is male or female. Sorry to say it, but that's how it is. Therefore, that individual stays home. Obviously, if he or she wants to go to Jerusalem, nobody stops that individual from going to Jerusalem and seeing the greatness of the Beis HaMikdash and the greatness of God and the miracles in the temple. Obviously, you can go. But we're talking about whether there's a mitzvah. Now, the word mitzvah has come to mean, colloquially in American Jewry, you know, a good deed. It's not that. It's not a good deed. It's not a suggestion. It is a commandment. That's a mitzvah. If somebody is mitzuveh, a male is mitzuveh, and a female is mitzuvah. So a mitzvah is the noun, the verb mitzvot. A mitzvah means a commandment. Is this individual commanded to go to Jerusalem? Answer, no. And that's why, even though everybody is obligated, these are the categories which are not obligated. And then tumtum is one of them. Next word, androgynos. Friends, if that's not a Greek word staring at you, then no word is. That is as Greek as you get. And I'm happy to say I'm learning a little bit of Greek right now. And that word is a Greek word. The rabbis just took it full bore, and they brought it right into, and it's not the only word like it. Apotropos is another word. Cathedra is another word that comes to mind. There are tremendous amounts of Greek in the Tanaitic literature. As we go through it, hopefully with God's help, we'll see more and more of it. You're welcome to come to my Midrash class on Sunday mornings at 8:45, and we'll learn Midrash, and you'll see more Greek words over there. So you'll not only build your Hebrew vocabulary, you're going to build up a Greek vocabulary. Androgynos. Right, even if you don't want to, says Mendel. Add the word androgynos to your noun listing. Androgynos, what's that? That's a hermaphrodite. And you'll say, what's that? And I'll say, I don't blame you for asking me that. What's that? Because how many times can I tell you a word you don't know the end, you know what it means? Oh, androgynos, that means a hermaphrodite. Can you talk English? Yeah. A hermaphrodite is somebody who is both male and female. He's got he or she has got indications of both male genitalia and female genitalia. And since that individual has both, that is another example of a Jewish individual who is not, again, obligated to go to the temple. That individual is not bound by Jewish law and under an obligation, under a chiyuv. A chiyuv, you can write that down, means obligation. Ches yud vavez, chiyuv, obligation. Such an individual is not obligated, like the tumtum, which has indeterminate genitalia. Over here, you've got the opposite. You've got very determinate genitalia, but of both genders. So is that individual a male or a female? The answer is yes, both male and female. And because it's both male and female, sadly, that individual gets kicked out of the obligation of the mitzvah, the commandment, to go to the temple. Can such a person go to the temple? Of course. Is such an individual obligated to go to the temple? No, not obligated to go to the temple, but of course may do so if that individual desires to. One more word, the nashim, and women, they're also not obligated to go to the temple, presumably because this is a mitzvah of Shizman Grama. The time causes it to be activated, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. And so women are not going to be bound by this mitzvah, also because explicitly the Pasuk had said, Yereh kol zechurcha, all your menfolk will be seen. will be obligated to come to the temple and see and be seen in Jerusalem. And that obviously knocks out the women folk. Okay, so we're going to wait for the Gemara to actually make that explicit to us, which is it is because Zman Grama, it's a mitzvah Shizman Grama, a mitzvah that the time obligates. Sometimes women are obligated to do a mitzvah, the lechora, that on the surface the time obligates. Okay, women are involved in the mitzvah of Hanukkah. They're also in on that, on the miracles. So therefore they light candles. But they're part of it. The husband lights for the wife. Again, not a lach l'maisa talk over here. Just out of my head, I'm realizing that sometimes there is a mitzvah, and sometimes that time is binding, and a woman is still part of it. How about Purim? How about Purim? Women were also in on the nes. They're also in on the mitzvah, on the nes. Who's that?
That is a Barry. Yeah, you know, food for thought. You can't answer this question, but I met one of the Andromedians people, and in this particular case, even though it's not allowed, she got married and she had a child. Then later she had the female part removed. And she got married to someone else as a male. And I don't know if he sired anybody, but after they make a change whereby now both organs are no longer present, I can't imagine them being a timtum. And it was very difficult for the rabbi to figure out, like, okay, you know, but we had enough people without this person for a minion and all that kind of stuff. But it leads a lot of things, you know, in this day and age where they could pick which one they wanted to be and mm-hmm. surgically do that.
Yes, you're quite right. They could probably, you know, pick what they want to be and go in that direction. And get out of this kind of, you know, camp where they're neither here nor there, or they're both. So that's certainly a possibility. That's beautiful, man. That's nice. So yes, there's no question, I guess, that today surgically you can determine where your heart, I guess, is leading you. That's about all I can possibly. I think you're right. That's about all I can possibly contribute to this. As a lawyer, I don't have any great special expertise in these matters. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a surgeon. I'm not involved. I'm just a student of the Torah, so I'm confronted by this word, and androgynos. Your story is fascinating, so thank you for sharing that with us, Barry. That's super interesting. And at the moment, that's probably as much as we're going to need to know for now about a tumtum and an androgynos. So that is fascinating. Shreya for that input. And so we've reached the point at 11:15, we can take a little bit of a break. I know that you're all loving this very much, but hopefully you've also added the word nushim, meaning women. Maybe you know that word already. If you did, that's great, and I guess you don't have to add it. But if you know that the word nushim is a new one on you, you never heard that word before, it means women, then write it down by all means in your listing of nouns. And now you've got words like re'iyah, the mitzvah of seeing and being seen, cheresh, deaf mute, shota, insane person, katan, a minor, tumtum, unknown gender person, androgynos, somebody who's got both, nashim, women. We're not even done anywhere near with the Mishnah, but we will stop right here, right now, for now, and let you review your nouns. If you have a Masechta Chagiga, nothing's going to stop you from continuing on the Mishnah on your own, but God willing, we're doing this slowly, surely, methodically, and I'm looking forward to it. Here's a wrinkle. My friends, please listen. This Wednesday, we have a dental appointment with my children. There is just simply, and it's mamish for now. I don't know why we picked 10:30. Months ago, we picked the dental appointment at 10:30. I figured nothing's going to compete with it. So we've already had this set in stone, and so we're going to stick with the dental appointment. So what I'm going to ask you to do is look over the Mishnah, go into the next one, get yourself an English translation, read fluently, just read it. Don't worry about anything. Just read the Mishnayos, read English translation, and we're going to resume our class. This class, God willing, will come on back on Friday morning at 10:30. We will continue our study of the opening Mishnah. We'll add to our vocabulary. There are a couple of adjectives also we're going to add. And we're also going to see a couple of verbs. It's going to be very exciting. Don't miss me on Friday. Come on back, please, at 10:30 on Friday morning. Again, afraid we cannot meet on Wednesday. Let's meet Friday morning at 10:30. And those of you who can join me this afternoon at 1 o'clock, we'll do the book When Mashiach Comes. There are very small little chapters. We'll cut through them. We'll do four or five little chapters. We'll gain information and knowledge. Should be very exciting. Don't forget our Tanakh class. It's all the same phone number. It's Tuesday night at 7:30, where we study Tanakh, a Sefer Melachim, Book of Kings. We've begun the study of chapter 18. I want to thank everybody who joins me so regularly. Barry, thank you so much for being such a valuable part of every class. Big yishar koach. Come on back, everybody. Hopefully this is for you, that you're going to enjoy Masechta Chagiga. Slowly but surely, we'll get through the Mishnayos, the Tosefta, the Midrashim, the Brisos. This is an exciting way to learn, and it's not done very frequently or as much as we'd like to see done. I think it's really great. Hopefully you agree. Come on back Friday morning at 10:30. We'll continue our study of the Mishnah, and we'll do another Mishnah. It's going to be just great. Hopefully we'll do as much as we can. Thank you, everybody, for joining me. Shmuel Plotzker signing off, wishing everybody a very healthy, safe day. And for those of you who can meet me at 1 o'clock, we'll see you at 1 o'clock today. Take care and be well, and all the best. Wish everybody have slacha. Bye-bye now.